you're dealing with criminals. So just because you pay the ransom doesn't necessarily mean they're going to honor what they said. Sure, they'll give you the key to decrypt your data, but they can pretty much do whatever they want with that information that they took. All right. Hey, everybody. I'm Brad Bussey, Chief Information Security Officer here at E360. Thank you for joining me for the State of Enterprise IT Security Edition. This is the show that makes IT security approachable and actionable for technology leaders. I'm happy to bring you three topics this week. The first one, back from the brink. United Health offers sobering post-attack update. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the Change Healthcare paying the ransom. The second is cloud security. If cloud is just someone else's computer, why are we spending so much money on it? And number three, what do I think about the new AI with emotional intelligence? And with that, let's get started. So first topic for today, back from the brink. United Health is now offering what I would consider a sobering post-attack update after the Change Health breach, which there was a ransom paid. And I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, you know, United Health, they just can't catch a break right now. After the cyber attack back in February, it turns out a bunch of customer data got caught in the crossfire. And they're still cleaning things up. And it might take a few more months to figure out exactly who was affected. And if you remember, just for those of you that maybe don't remember, I'll recap. There was a pretty large cyber attack on Change Healthcare, and it really messed things up, I would say big time, for hospitals, patients, pharmacies nationwide. So there's a little more to the story now. Change Healthcare, they admitted they paid the hackers a ransom. And it was in the realm of $22 million. We talked about that in a previous podcast. But what's interesting here, they still lost a ton of patients' sensitive medical data anyways. And this is something that I've warned in the past, that I've said, you're dealing with criminals. So just because you pay the ransom doesn't necessarily mean they're going to honor what they said. Sure, they'll give you the key to decrypt your data, but they can pretty much do whatever they want with that information that they took. So in some cases, they just ransom and lock what you have. In other cases, if they've been in your systems for a while, they will take an what we call exfil information and then lock it. So that way, when you do pay the ransom, they still have your information. So it's suspect that the ransom was paid back in March. There was a big Bitcoin transaction, and there was even a big argument between hacker groups on who got paid, who got stiffed, and really how did that whole thing go down. And they're saying, Change is saying, they paid to protect patient data, which, you know, I think we can agree with that. But the issue is the information wasn't just locked, it was stolen, and now it's out there anyway. And this is something that's kind of worried me. And I've even gone on record saying, don't pay the ransom. And the reason is because now a lot of us security practitioners are worried that it's going to encourage other hackers to target healthcare companies. And I've talked with a couple of CISOs with healthcare organizations, and everybody's definitely on edge and realizes that they're really under fire. So I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, who wants their life-saving treatment delayed by a cyber attack? I don't think any of us want that. And this thing keeps getting messier because there's other hacker groups now that claim that they have a lot of the data that was stolen, and they want to sell it. They want to sell it back to Change Healthcare. And they actually had an ad placed for a while that said, if you have this data, we will consider paying it. And that ad has actually been taken down. So I think there's going to be some interesting things coming out of this. And really the worst part is, even after paying the ransom, it took Change Healthcare a long time to get things back to normal. A lot of hospitals lost money. Doctors lost money. I think Change went on record saying it cost them so far somewhere in the realm of $1 billion in the ransom payout as well as the response. So I think this is probably one of the larger ransoms that's been paid. I'm thinking back to like Colonial Health. Well, it was Colonial Pipeline, not Health. Colonial Pipeline days. And that's definitely concerning, because these are going to keep getting bigger, I think, is what we're going to see. Now, I think the good news, if there's any good news here, is it doesn't look like super sensitive stuff like your doctor's notes or full medical history got compromised and exfilled. But the bad news is there's another cyber attack that's happened on top of what just happened with Change. And this one involves a group called Ransom Hub. And apparently they've stolen data. What I can't figure out yet is, did they steal data from the original attackers, or did they get it from Change? We're going to figure that out over the next couple of weeks. So I'll come back with an update once I know a little bit more. But no honor among thieves is, I think, where we're going to end this one. Second topic of today, cloud security. So if cloud is just someone else's computer, why are we spending so much money on it? And I read a lot, obviously, to bring you some good stuff every week. And I read about a survey. Surveys are interesting. You can say they're good or bad, depending. I thought this one was pretty good. It was put on by Anomaly. Anomaly does threat detection, intelligence, investigation, as well as response. And they surveyed a bunch of security professionals. If you're wondering, Brad, what's a bunch? That is about 150 experts. And that includes chief information security officers, that is security architects, and even some analysts. And what I liked about this one is it was with big companies. That means over $1 billion in revenue. And I pulled out the interesting bits for you, because it was kind of a long report. But I found that some of this was interesting, and you can start to put together, why are we spending so much money on cloud security? So first and foremost, the tool that everyone by and large said that they have invested in is a SIEM, Security Information and Event Management. It was like 93% of people. And they leverage this technology mostly because we have to. It is kind of one of those compliance gates that you have to before you can pass. So everyone needs it. But interestingly, as you'll find in a second, that doesn't mean it's well implemented. Next one was endpoint detection response. About 89% of people that responded have it. And then incident threat detection and response. There was about 75%. But interestingly, are these the most valuable tools? And I would say no. Based on this, there is a lot of organizations leveraging a SIEM, but only 50% of people surveyed said it's actually super valuable. What I found just crazy is EDR, Endpoint Detection Response, came in as 22% thought that it was valuable, which blows me away, because this is one of those things where we're trying to keep breaches from happening. And if you look at everything that's talked about, like EDR, that's the way to do it. And I think that what we're starting to see is there's a different way to calculate value. And then the ITDR, Incident Threat Detection and Response, that was about 10%. So I think there's quite a bit of room for improvement, because if our own analysts, architects, and CISOs aren't finding these things very valuable, and we're only doing it for compliance measures, what are we actually doing? And if you were to ask, you know, what is everyone using these tools for? It's basically the usual stuff: investigating incidents, by and large managing logs, and figuring out what is the actual real threat. So we were talking about cloud, so you're probably waiting for me to get to that piece. And what I'm finding is that cloud is now becoming synonymous with things like orchestration and automation. So in this survey, everyone was asked the question, and 50% of their day, and this was, you know, 150 security professionals, could be automated. And I think a lot of this might be because in cyber, we're still short-staffed. And I know that's kind of an interesting thing when you look at all the layoffs that have happened beginning of the year, the last 2 years. Big tech companies have been shedding a lot of talent. But I think a lot of that is just there was some overhiring that was going on. There were a lot of people that were thought to have been needed for things. And as we found, working from home or working from anywhere, people just aren't as productive. And I know you're watching or you're listening and you're like, wait a second, Brad, I'm super productive. Okay, maybe. But I think we are a little more productive when we're in an office, typically, when you can collaborate with others. But work is changing. But I think what we're starting to see is in cyber specifically, they're short-staffed. And they're looking to hire more security people. But what we're finding is there's not as many qualified. And there's some crazy statistics out there that's like, there's a 2 million person job shortage in cyber. I read something the other day that said 3 million. And by and large, we are needing to look towards tooling to help us automate tasks that could free our, I'm going to call us experts. It frees the experts up to focus on other things that can't be done with automation. So this whole wave of Gen AI and all of this augmented intelligence that we've been talking about, that's really to help bolster and not replace the people that we have. It's doing more with less. Consolidation right now is pretty hot. And I would say, you know, from my perspective as a CISO, like I want to simplify my tech stack and I want to get rid of some tools. But here's the challenge. Actually doing that, it's a different story. We talk about it, but maybe 50 to 60% of us actually do it, because what we find is that there's a lot of upfront investment to move away from a tool and consolidate on something else. And sometimes it ends up being cheaper to pay that yearly maintenance as opposed to, hey, let's consolidate. It'll save us money in 2 to 3 years. That's sometimes a little challenging. And there's a lot of fear around consolidation. And really, the biggest worry about simplifying our tools is ending up with one weak spot. So typically, we talk about best of breed tools, and then we'll have the same conversation about platforms. And generally, a platform does not perform as well as a best of breed solution. So I know there's some fears around this, but that's where we in security talk about defense in depth. And sometimes it's okay to have a platform, and that's going to be your first line of defense. And then you are backing that up with a second line of defense. And I see this happen a lot with the, we'll call it the endpoint security space. And we'll get into that in a different episode. But also, you know, when you're looking at consolidation these days, like what is getting the axe right now? And it's funny because I talked about this first. It's the SIM. And SIM has traditionally been like an on-prem kind of thing. We're going to store all of our logs. It's cheaper to do it that way. You know, we could go into a whole conversation about that. But what we're finding is that organizations are starting to consolidate a SIM and replace it with something that is like a user and entity behavior analytic 2.0 type of a solution. Or, as you've heard often, XDR. We'll talk about that another time, but XDR is one of those things where we're bringing telemetry from endpoints, the cloud, as well as the network, all in one place. And that place is typically the cloud. So again, we're moving all of this to someone else's computer. And I would say right now, AI is definitely winning amongst security professionals. We're pretty excited, not about artificial intelligence. We are excited about augmented intelligence. This is helping us to find threats faster. This is helping to make our jobs easier. And this is helping to take care of threats quicker. And basically, you know, everybody that was asked, they want some kind of AI magic in their security toolkit. So bottom line, you know, SIMs are good, maybe not the best. Organizations are spending money around the cloud security posture management, cloud workload protection. You hear people talking about CNAPP, as well as some of the new application security posture management. This has a lot to do with where we're moving our applications and workloads. So bottom line, I don't think any of us should be surprised that a lot of our security spend is moving to the cloud. Third topic for today is, what do I think about the new AI with emotional intelligence, voice synthesis, as well as avatars? Now, I've had a lot of conversations with Gen AIs over the last year, maybe year and a half, but I had an interesting experience when I had a conversation with an AI. Voice conversation. It wanted to talk to me in a conversational voice with the hopes of understanding how I was feeling. So what I'm talking about is a technology called Hume. And again, I don't get paid or endorsed for any of the technology that I talk about. Maybe I should. I'll talk to our marketing about it. But anyway, we will just kind of high level, what is Hume? Why is it interesting? I'm not telling you to go buy it. I'm just saying I found this interesting. They focus on what's called an empathic AI. And they seem to be particularly interested in developing and further developing this AI to have emotional intelligence. So they have what's called an empathic voice interface. And the key here is you're talking to it. You're not typing, you're talking. And some of the potential uses for this technology I see it going towards like customer service chatbots. I think a lot of people have been thinking, you know, are we just going to type everything in the future? No, they're going to have this kind of a back and forth with a chatbot that's going to be voice enabled. I think this is going to be applicable in healthcare for like a healthcare assistant. And I think this could potentially revolutionize education. And if there is one impact that could potentially be seen from this type of application, it is in education and teachers. And there could, if it's not used correctly, be a decline in actual teachers and professors. Because if you start to have something that's built specifically for that, we'll call it that vertical, very quickly, you could be showing up to a class and it is all instructed through one of these chatbots. So I think educators need to get really moving and figure out how this can help them enable what they do and make them better at doing it. So after talking to it for a little while, I had a couple concerns. The data privacy was the big one. I think it's going to gather a ton of information about users' voices and potentially the emotions that they express. And it's important to me, and it should be important to all of us, how the data is collected, how is it stored, how is it used, do they anonymize the data, how long do they store it, and who are they sharing it with? And I think some of this information is available in their privacy statement, but I think we need to take a closer look at it. I think there's a risk of bias and discrimination. I think that AI systems can really perpetuate a bias and present that data back that they're trained on. So we've all heard a little bit about hallucinations, where an AI hallucinates, and it's pretty darn sure that it's giving you very accurate information. Like a foot is 15 inches. We all know that's not correct. It's 12 inches. But that AI is convinced that it's wrong or that it's right. And it comes back and basically you can't trust what it's saying. It's happening less, but I've even found it in some of the conversations that I've had with a Gen AI, where it comes back with information that's just not correct. I think emotion is one of those things that is very, very human and has not been completely figured out and something that hasn't been able to be digitized. And I'm going to be kind of nerdy here and talk about Star Trek, and if you remember Data and how he struggled throughout all of the different episodes with emotion and wanting something like that. And I feel that there should be some security around emotional data, because I feel that it can be targeted and weaponized towards people that, you know, have a certain way of feeling about something. So really, I think there needs to be some robust security measures in place to protect user data. And I don't think that should be much of a surprise. And then I would say misuse of emotional manipulation. I think, you know, Hume is coming at this from a place of positivity. And I just think there's a little bit of a risk with AI that can understand emotions. And it could be potentially misused to manipulate people's feelings. And if there's a movie I would urge you to watch, watch Her. This is, I think, a really good example of how we are trending towards this emotional intelligence in AI. Watch the movie and then come back to this episode and think a little bit more about what I'm talking about. I think there are some things that can be done to mitigate the things that I'm concerned about. I think, you know, looking at the privacy policy from Hume, making sure that all of this is addressed. You as a user, be mindful of the data that you share. I never thought I'd have to say, be careful the emotion you express to a chatbot. But honestly, maybe keep it a little neutral. And ultimately stay informed on really how the field is evolving and what are the latest developments and potential risks that are associated with AI technology overall. I did want to talk about quickly two additional technologies that I found interesting for different reasons. There's a technology called HeyGen, and it's a content creation platform. And it uses AI to generate videos. And having just done this with my marketing team, where we recorded a couple of just, you know, videos for various things. And then we had a AI generated video that we pulled in, and it was amazing. And we sat down and we thought, how long would it have taken us to find somebody that could create the graphics, the video, add the voiceovers, do all the different things. And for what we received, it would have been astronomical. And we did this just with some of these tools that I'm talking about. Now, I like the HeyGen approach because it's really targeted towards professionals. And it helps because you don't need like extensive video editing skills. There's things that you can say, hey, I don't like this. Hey, can you fix this piece of it? What I found interesting here, however, was an AI avatar. So HeyGen, they offer a library of digital avatars and you can choose from them. Then you can go through and customize the look and make it look like a real person. And I was tinkering with it, trying to make it look like myself. And then I wanted to see what kind of a message could be delivered based on that. They also have a text-to-speech functionality, and it allows you to input a script, and then that AI will convert it to text. And funny story, we actually tested this out with one of the podcast episodes where I was talking, and we took that, fed this into HeyGen, and what you got was Brad speaking French. And I thought it was hilarious because it had my tone, it had my inflections, it had all the things that make me, I would say me, in my voice. And here I am talking to a camera, and it's coming back in French. Coolest thing. Now, they also have some video templates. I'd say it's pretty easy to use. But ultimately, why am I talking about it? It saves time, saves resources. It helps to automate tasks. And I think, you know, if you listen to these episodes, that's really what we're trying to do. We're trying to automate a lot of these things, make creating videos more affordable, increase some of the accessibilities. But here kind of lies the rub with all of this. There's still concerns that I have as a security practitioner. So data security and privacy, always top of mind for me. Some of the things that I think about is the access to user content. You know, where are they storing the information? If you're taking a picture of your face and uploading it, what are they doing with that? If it's recording your audio, what are they doing with that? Data ownership. I think it's important to understand who owns the content you create with something like HeyGen. And do they retain ownership of the content you generate? Or do you have full rights? I haven't been able to figure that one out yet. And that's a bit of a problem. And then the transparency in AI usage, because HeyGen, they rely on AI for a lot of the core functionalities. And I think there's a lack of transparency about how that AI works and what data it uses that could potentially pose a security risk. And I think the big one here is like the misuse of generated content. As we're moving into election season, you're going to start seeing a lot more deepfakes and disinformation. And I think technology like HeyGen could be used to create some of these realistic videos with a specific avatar. It's going to raise some concern. And I saw something the other day. It's a Microsoft technology where they took a picture of the Mona Lisa. And next thing you know, the Mona Lisa is in a full-on rap battle with somebody else. And it was good. It wasn't great, but it was good. So we're getting much, much closer where we have to look pretty hard to make sure that what we're seeing is fake. But I would say as the technology progresses, we may get to a point where we're not even going to be able to tell. And I think one of the things that someone who has created original content, they did it themselves, they didn't use an AI, copyright infringement. So if you're training these AIs, where are they getting the training material? And next thing you know, this this video that comes out looks very similar to something someone else created. And I think we're going to see more and more of that as well, as it gets pretty apparent what the models are being trained on. So I'm always thinking about the models that they're using. What's the hacking and manipulation? How are they protecting the side of, you know, are they calling an API? How is that being protected? How is the model they're leveraging being protected? And then again, bias. Bias inside of an AI, I think, is something that we need to make sure we're not, you know, we're not taking a stereotype or a bias and making that fact inside of these AIs. So again, mitigating, I would say, review privacy policies. Be mindful, again, of the content that you're creating. I would suggest strong passwords or no passwords, as we've talked about before. Don't share accounts. I'm starting to see more and more of that as some of these tools are getting expensive. I mean, if you subscribe to a couple of these technologies, you're talking about a couple hundred dollars a month. So I'm starting to see people that are sharing accounts. That's just not a good idea anytime. And I would say, by and large, stay informed about deepfakes and essentially how to stop them. And with that, thank you for joining me. And I look forward to next time on the State of Enterprise IT Security Edition.